The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Rolene, good afternoon from a very strange weathered Johannesburg.
Well, tell me, why is the weather strange?
Rain, no rain. I think we're getting a lot of residual weather that's passed on from the horrific floods we experienced in KZN. And there is another tropical depression that is forming south-southwest of KZN. I think it's impacting on the weather throughout the country. But heartbreakingly, 253 people are so far reported dead in the devastating floods in KwaZulu-Natal. So, yeah, the weather throughout the country is very strange. And I think the vibe is generally very strange. It's almost like a sense of disbelief that we're going through another disaster so shortly after the insurrection last year, July, which also left us all aghast.
It's just, it's absolutely horrific. I see it did make the news here in Israel as well. And our thoughts and our prayers are with anybody who is affected by the floods, by the inclement weather.
Moving on to what's happening in Israel, we see that Israeli security forces are continuing to crack down on those suspected to have cooperated with terrorists, and more arrests have been made. But troops are hunting for the father of the Tel Aviv terrorist. What's the latest on this, and why would the father of the terrorist be relevant in all of this?
Well, this is quite an extraordinary story. You know that Israel cooperates with the Palestinian Authority security services. Now, the father of the terrorist that killed three people in the horrific attack last Thursday in Tel Aviv, his name is Fatih Hazen. It's the name of the father. He has escaped the town of Jenin. How, we don't know, because the town is actually sealed off. It is believed that it could be sheltered in safe houses by Palestinian Islamic Jihad militants who are taking him from safe house to safe house, or one hiding spot to another. But the reason why he is a person of interest is because soon after the attack occurred and the news broke who the terrorist was that perpetrated the horrific attack, he took to social media and started a campaign of incitement. Now, this is something we take very, very seriously because it does have deadly consequences. In fact, earlier today, the cyber unit that works within the state's attorney office, they released their report saying that since the start of this recent spate of terror attacks, there has been an increase of 800% in the amount of online incitement, specifically on Facebook and on Twitter. They say that they have received about 5,815 online incitement complaints, which is just absolutely staggering. But the IDF are looking for Fatih Hazem. He was filmed on his front porch soon after the attack occurred, saying, "Allah will purify the Al-Aqsa Mosque from the impure occupiers." And he said that, you know, now it is the time to hand the baton on to the younger generations. And, you know, with immediate effect, the security forces started to investigate him, investigate his background. And sources inside the Jenin camp said that, you know, this is very bizarre from him because he has been estranged from his family. They say he never showed any interest in his family or his children. He didn't care whether or not they studied or supported them financially or cared that they got married. And now all of a sudden there is this change in attitude. And our concern is for the situation for young Palestinians. Our concern is that the financial situation, the lack of employment, and also the type of education that they receive it's creating what we are calling the lost generation of young Palestinians.
Moving on to Joseph's tomb, it's been desecrated twice in 2 days. What's the latest on that?
Well, today there have been heavy clashes with Palestinian rioters and Israeli troops who are at the tomb of Joseph. As we discussed the other day, it is a site that is considered sacred, not just to Jews, but also to Christians, to Muslims, and to Samaritans. And the construction team that arrived to renovate the tomb had to do so under heavy police and IDF guard. The IDF will stay to watch over the team to ensure their safety as they renovate, as they fix where it was desecrated and also set on fire. And there have been heavy clashes between rioters trying to get in there and the IDF. We know that at least 17 Palestinians have been injured and one killed in an exchange of fire with the IDF.
Israel's state controller says that victims of terror may have recourse by filing civil suits. How would people file this and how would it work?
Well, this is also very interesting. There is a law, and according to the state comptroller, his name is Matanyahu Engelman, he said, you know, there is a law in place that does allow the victims of terror attacks to file civil suits. Now, we know that the Palestinian Authority receive an exorbitant amount of aid money, which they put into what we call the pay for slay scheme. It's a very, very controversial issue. It's one where Israel has appealed to the international community. You know, if you are going to give aid, you have to condition it. It can't go towards this. The rationale given by Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is it's a fund to look after orphans and widows, but we know it's not. We know that it's a salary scheme. Salaries are paid in on a scale that is relevant to the severity of the crime that the terrorist has perpetrated. So if you're in jail for trying to stab an Israeli, you'll get 2,000 shekels per month. But if you've killed several Israelis in a terror organization and paid with your life, your family is likely to get a monthly stipend of 10,000 shekels. That's how it works. It's actually just creating this never-ending economy of terror. But he says that what the state does need to put into effect is civil suits. So victims of terror can file civil suits with or against the terrorist, the terrorist's family, and the Palestinian Authority, and that can offset that financial gain that they get and offset that never-ending cycle of paying salaries, which leads to this motivation to commit terror attacks.
Quickly, let's cover what we missed yesterday, and that was the visit of the first cabinet minister to Kosovo. And I hope I pronounce his name right, Esawi Fredge. Why was this visit so significant, and who exactly is Esawi Fredge?
Well, first of all, I have to commend you on your pronunciation. Esawi Fredge is our Minister of Regional Cooperation. If you don't know who he is, he's a member of the far-left Meretz Party. As we know, our current government, and yes, it's still in place, is a coalition of all sectors of Israeli society, from the left to the right. Esawi Fredge is an Arab Israeli, very proudly so, and he is the first cabinet minister to visit Kosovo. Now, it's hugely, hugely significant. Kosovo was one of the countries who normalized ties with Israel in 2020, albeit separate to the Abraham Accords. There has been an exchange of diplomatic missions, and it's very, very relevant because Kosovo is a Muslim majority country, and you know, we have heard those murmurings that we could see Indonesia and maybe other countries moving towards normalization that are also majority Muslim states. But he is in Kosovo. He is there to increase our cooperation with the Kosovo government. He will meet the prime minister as well as the foreign minister. And it's really a moment of great pride. And he says himself he is so proud to be the first Israeli to be able to go there, to be able to sign and make these important alliances and agreements between our two countries, which will only lead to increased cooperation.
And lastly, a very interesting topic, especially with regards to the way the media is treated worldwide. We all know that covering conflict can be very complex, and in today's social media age, it's even more important than ever to present facts. But it seems as if the Israeli journalists have faced criticism by the Israeli government for their coverage of last Thursday night's terror attack. Why has this happened? What is the impact that it's had? And how should it have been covered?
Well, this is a very interesting debate, and it's currently going on in Israel's Knesset, in our parliament. And I'd be very interested to hear your take as somebody who does come from law enforcement. On Thursday night, one of the criticisms, as police were on their manhunt along with our Shin Bet, our internal security force, as well as the IDF, was that journalists were closely monitoring the communication and reporting on some of the communication via radio. They were in the control room. They managed to get in there. And there has been some criticism because the press, they have a responsibility to the public to report on matters of interest. And of course, the security forces are saying you could be giving away vital information, you could be giving away where we are. So there is currently this debate happening in the Knesset with lawmakers saying that, this shouldn't be allowed. In fact, the Shin Bet, the domestic security services, have actually sent a letter to media outlets condemning reporters for how they broadcast the event. And just from my own personal perspective, I'm very present on social media, on Twitter especially, and I've seen a lot of people, trying to break the news, trying to report the news as it happens. And it's really, really very dangerous, in my opinion, on two fronts. First of all, you endanger our security services. And second of all, you create a sense of panic. And I'd be very curious to hear what your thoughts are.
So, Rolene, I've got 20 seconds before we go to news. So I think it's very reckless. I think if there's an operation taking place, rules of engagement need to be respected by the media. They need to take the information from the Joint Operational Command and report on it as it gets fed to them by the respective spokespersons. To go out on a limb and to just start reporting so that you can break the news is extremely reckless and extremely problematic. Rolene, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take time tomorrow.
I look forward to it.